Herzlich willkommen zu Endlich Begehrenswert, der Podcast für Frauen, die bereit sind, endlich zu der Frau zu werden, die sie schon immer sein wollten. Und heute habe ich wieder einen super, super interessanten Interviewgast hier. Ihr seht mein Shirt hier. Lord Neil, Seven Deadly Sins. Ich bin hier gerade in New York bei einer Show, die gestern Premiere hatte, und habe hier den Hauptdarsteller, den Star. Er ist unter die Finalisten bei America's Got Talent gekommen und hat jetzt hier am Broadway seine eigene Show. Und ich bin super froh, ihn hier interviewen zu dürfen. Welcome, Lord Neil. It's so good to have you in this show tonight.
Thank you very much to invite me.
Well, I'm so happy you are here. So you have an incredible story. I love incredible stories and I love telling incredible stories. And your story is extraordinary.
Thank you.
So I already said that you have your own show here now on Broadway, but that's not the life you set up for. You've done something totally else and then went into show business. And so I don't know everything, but what did you do before you went into show business?
Well, it started as usual, very, very casually. So you don't plan. I finished my university, and I was in France at that period. And during that period, I usually work, I would say, but also as a sportsman, I was fight professionally, so extreme sports and fighting sports. During the period of university, you have to make your day and find some money for, for the studies. And I start working also for gigs, events, and this kind of stuff. And I start also to have the passion of magic. So first books, and then first gigs, and then you start from scratch. And I realized that the word escapism, the escape art, that it's part of magic, but it's the magic without without tricks. Which sounds contradictional, but this is exactly how it is.
Yeah, I was confused when I saw you the first time and I was told you are an escape artist, and I didn't really have a clue what that is, so I thought it would be some form of illusion, but then I realized it was not. It was real.
Yeah, it's not, but the same principles that you apply to magic, you apply also in escaping, which means that when you perform, you stimulate the same neurons and the same ideas that magic does. So in magic, you have point A, point B, and you drive people from that point to another in an impossible way. With escape, you go from A to B, you know, people know in advance what's going to happen, and somehow they are feeling what you feel in the same during that journey. So it's the same idea, completely different pattern. This is why if you are a magician, you cannot be an escape artist, and the opposite. Otherwise, nobody will believe it, because say, okay,
that makes
it's
sense.
A trick.
That makes sense. And then your story begins like the story of the show begins. 12 years ago, you were chained to the bottom of a water tank.
Yeah.
How the hell did that happen?
Actually, now was 13 years ago.
13 years ago.
And, well, you have to start from somewhere. So that summer, I was I had this gig. And usually, this is what happened. This is why sometimes it's very dangerous. Because they ask you to do something, and you always say yes.
So you already were an escape artist at that time?
Well, I didn't prove myself yet. So I didn't get in something that could prove that I was an escape artist. Somehow only...
But you practiced it.
Yeah, I was practicing. But yeah, how to escape from ropes, start with the cuffs, and handcuffs, and then start to realize how to open padlocks. It was the real begin. But when you perform escaping, you have you use the elements. So it could be air, it could be fire, it could be earth. And I started with water, with water, because I was a passionate about water. I'm a diver, scuba diver. I love the water. So I thought that could be it. And I had this gig. They asked me, can you perform any escape? I said, yes. So we organized. We rent a crane. We built up with our own hands. A coffin, a wooden coffin, and well, the idea was that I was locked inside the coffin went down deep in the water.
That alone sounds so scary, I mean.
Yeah, well, but from the book, it was easier. So I see the descriptions also from the classic, from Houdini. You know, magic has more than 3,000 years of history. Mm-hmm. And about escape, you can find a lot of examples. One of the most famous, of course, is Houdini, that mm-hmm. he performed 100 years ago. A lot of different escapes with a lot of success. I don't know how he died. You don't want to know. Because people believe, okay, the guy did crazy things, so he has to die like a hero. Mm-hmm. No, sometimes death mm-hmm. doesn't see anyone mm-hmm. different to each other. And, well, by the way, reading books and take some inspirations. We built up this wooden coffin with a couple of friends. And we did it. Say, okay, let's do this. I did my rehearsals, I would say, but I didn't do it in the water.
Were you scared?
No, I was excited. I was excited because the idea was, let's do something. What is new? What is something that I don't know? Make me very curious.
So you've always been curious.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's probably the biggest problem and the best thing that I do in my life.
Right.
Everything is new, make me curious. And then I want to try. I tried. The problem was, you know, when you go in the water, down in the water, there are atmosphere. Every almost 10 meters, you have one atmosphere, yeah. two atmosphere, which means that from the external part, you have pressure mm-hmm. if you are completely sealed. Mm-hmm. And so this is what happened.
So deep did you go down?
I did down almost 17 meters. So
in the coffin.
In the coffin. So what I did, my rehearsal, it was just in on surface or very few meters down the water. Mm-hmm. And of course, the pressure was different mm-hmm. of the water on the coffin. And I realized, so you are inside, you still have some air, but then I realized that I was sealed. And this is like when you don't know, you have a bottle, you put a cap on top, so there is no air inside, and it's impossible to open. This mm-hmm. is what happened.
Like
so the trick was that at the end of the coffin, with my legs, I can push and open like a flap, but the flap was stuck. So I was there in chains. I released myself. Nobody could see because, of course, there were no cameras there. And the people see only the coffin goes down in the water and then comes back with me on top. That was the idea. But yeah, it didn't work. I got stuck in there. I tried to open.
And so then, what was going on in your mind or in your feelings when you realized this doesn't work?
I realized that I had two options. The first one, I'm done. I stay here and it's done. The second one is, let's try something. But what? And what I try...
So you were really calm and clear
yes.
thinking, like facing death and
yes.
like really... Wow.
This is what they also teach you in every kind of extreme things you do. It's the moment you panic, the moment you have adrenaline, the moment you start freaking out, is the moment you're done. You cannot... You cannot find the solution.
Yeah, but knowing it is different than controlling it. I mean, I work with so many women who build business and we panic sometimes because of business and it's not life or death.
Well, I would like to give you an example that everybody can understand easily. You are a woman. Mm. And as a woman, you have an instinct. And your first instinct is, of course, protection. Right. More than man. Much more than man. I'm sure that if you have kids.
I do have yeah. two kids.
So if something happened to your kid, you don't freak out. You don't panic. Before you react, you yeah. try to find the solution. You try to save them with whatever you can in anywhere.
You think it's an instinct?
Yes. And then after, maybe when the ER, when the doctors mm-hmm. took care of her or of him, then it's the moment when you have your panic attack, mm-hmm. when you start to cry. But in that very moment, I think every month in the world, the first thing they do is be focused. What is the problem? Mm-hmm. Let's solve it. And after, I'm going to panic or do anything else. So it's not something special. It's something that we have. As a man, I don't think I have that instinct. maybe a little bit.
I think you do.
But then you try to somehow to train that kind of things. And then also when I used to fight as a professional fighter, if you go on to fight with adrenaline, you lose because you have...
Wow.
It's like playing chess. It's not like go in a bar and have a fight with somebody with broken bottles. You have to go there. You have your training. You have been for 4 or 5 months only focused on the match that you have to fight. You know the characteristic of the guy. So it's more like, it's not about the pain. It's not about I have to win. It's just do your best. Mm-hmm. This is the key. Well, in that moment, what I did is probably also with a little bit of desperation, I could say that. The good thing is that we were so amateurs that we made the coffee not perfectly. So when I start to bump against the coffin, a rhyme started on the wood, and then after just all of a sudden it opens and the water comes in. So the effect of no air went away, and I was able to get out. People didn't know what happened, of course, because mm-hmm. then I got on the surface, take a bow, and everybody
so
claps.
It looked like everything worked.
Yes, but then I did what probably all marathon people usually do after a marathon. I went out and said, never again. Mm-hmm. I would never do this stupid mm-hmm. things again in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Then the day after I said, but it was cool. And then after 2 days, what if I'm going to make it better next time I take more precaution before doing something like that? And then you start thinking that the problem wasn't the act itself, just that I wasn't prepared.
Wow.
And this is what I do today. I prepare myself for years before doing something like that.
But you said you were diagnosed with post-traumatic disorders?
Yeah, this happened a year after this mm-hmm. one. It was the second. Well, I had the opportunity, and I was lucky enough to be part of a TV program that was all the best magicians,
wow.
young best magicians in the world. Mm-hmm. I came. It was in Italy, actually, so it was an international TV show, but it was made. It was in Italy, and I don't tell you the story how I got there because it's crazy. But then when I got there, nobody had any clue who I was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who is this?
And
guy?
Now I just got excited. Now there are buses here in New York. Your face on it. You are on the big screens on Times Square. Your face is everywhere, all over New York City.
Sorry, right New Yorkers. I'm sorry.
I'm sure they love it.
My ugly face. But on the bus, I still pay the tickets. It's not for free. I have. If I got on the bus, you pay the tickets like the others. Yeah, that's
so you came to that TV show and then...
Yeah, I went to that TV shows and I was lucky enough that they liked what I did. So I started working for real. So that was my passport to say, yes, I'm a professional because mm-hmm. I did the TV program. So it's like, it sounds crazy. It's not a school or they give you a diploma.
Yeah.
They just do it on the field and they say, yes, you're able to do mm-hmm. it. So the year after I was in France for a TV program. And we did rehearsal during the whole summer, and I was touring in Turkey, Cyprus, all different places, Malta. And in Cyprus, I had this accident, so I had 60 kilos of chains down in a pool. It was more than 10 meters, and I remember there were only Russian audience because they were all tourists from Russia. Also, the host of the evening was Russian, so I didn't understand anything of what he was
mm-hmm,
saying.
Mm-hmm.
I knew more or less what I was. And I got stuck on the bottom of the pool. So I had 2 bodyguards with me.
So you were again in that situation, like really like
yeah.
you're not in control anymore. Right?
But this time I couldn't do anything because I was there, was stuck. The reason that happened, what happened is that the pool wasn't deep enough. When I jump in the water with the weight of the chains, I arrived in the bottom too fast, so the water wasn't able to stop me as much as I need. And one of the padlock got stuck here on my kidney. So in the moment that I arrived, I hit the padlock and I lose all air. So in that moment, I was there.
So you lost
in the
consciousness.
No. I lost my breath. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't able to keep my breath and stay underwater as long as was necessary. But I escaped from the chains with that weight. It took time. And I was already done when I arrived. So that was the 50 seconds probably the longest 50 seconds of my life. Because when I got there with, I give signals up with the bubbles. So mm-hmm. I arrive and then I give bubbles. So the people knows that I'm okay mm-hmm. or I'm in trouble. That was our signal. But when I arrived, because I jump, I really give away all my air.
Couldn't do bubbles.
Couldn't do anything. So I don't remember exactly what happened. I know that I was in Cyprus, so you know Cyprus is not a very political good situation. It's divine. So I had these two bodyguards. That I realized they were two former special unit. So I mean, two guys that didn't know what they have mm-hmm. to do. And probably they got a signal. Something happened. They came to rescue me. Mm-hmm. They took me underwater, and I was in shock. I was in shock, and the first thing I said, I want to do it again right away, because I realized my brain, my mind starting to give me signals like, if you're not going again now, you will never touch the water again. Mm-hmm. So yeah, against all odds, I did it again, and again was wrong, but this time just because I was in shock. Mm-hmm. Somehow I managed to escape from the chains. I did the act in half of the time as usually I had to be done. I went out. I wasn't there. So mm-hmm. I was there with my body, but my mind was somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Then it was one of the worst nights of my life. I was shaking, trembling for the whole night. And then the very morning, 5 o'clock, I went to wash my face at the sink and I couldn't touch the water. So I had a minute of gasp when the water was in my face. So I stopped the tour, went back to Italy where I was living there. I was living that period, and I went to a good friend of mine who helped me to be where I am today. I wouldn't mm-hmm. be here if it wasn't for him. He's a psychiatrist, a doctor. Mm-hmm. I'm not his patient. I'm just a friend. But he's also master of mischief. He teaches theories of mischief. He works with soldiers in the armies. Mm-hmm. And also he's a great writer. His name is Matteo Rampin. And he helped me. He helped me with special therapy. The same therapy that usually veterans do after a shock in, mm-hmm. In the war. And he helped me to get back on my feet. And after 3 weeks, I was ready to start again.
3 weeks already?
Yes.
You are incredible.
No, he was incredible. He did something that I couldn't believe was possible.
So one thing that I want to mention here is you got help.
Yes.
You did not think you have to do it on yourself. Yeah. You were looking for help.
Yes. Yes. You cannot get out from that kind of situations alone. Impossible. Mm-hmm. Impossible. So what I did was getting back, and I experienced this where I realized that I had a serious PTSD for the first time when we took off with the plane. I had my first panic attack, and I said, how is possible? I took hundreds of flights. Mm-hmm. How is possible that now I have a panic attack? And it was terrible. So I was sweating. I couldn't breathe. I'm gonna get out from the airplane. And then I realized after about a couple of weeks what was happening. Mm-hmm. I can't drive an airplane. Oh. So I'm not in control. It's not.
And that's crazy. Like being an escape artist and having faced death so many times. And
well, but that time I didn't face enough time, probably. So in that moment, my mind decides that everything was out of my control, which is our life.
Right.
But in that moment was specific, you know, when you took a flight, at least one time you say, what if? Okay.
Yeah.
And that was my what if moment. And and what happened in the water now was in the air. I was able to continue the tour. I didn't fly it at all. I was moving by car or by ferry or by train, anything.
So you found different ways to make to go for your goals.
Yeah.
And it did not let that stop you. But now you're on planes again.
Yeah. No, but well, after that accident, we went in France It was my very first act of escape that I did in front of millions of people. And that moment was a game changer.
I believe that.
Yeah.
And now, like I said, you're having your show here in New York, then your own show in Las Vegas. So what's the one thing that you would recommend people who feel stuck, who feel like they cannot move forward to get where they want to go? What's the one thing you would recommend to them?
Well, you don't need any superpowers. You don't need any special talent. Some people call it to be stubborn. Other people just say...
I guess that's what you need to get there where you are.
Well, but other people just say that as long as you believe in what you're doing, it's also a sort of marketing thing. If you are not the first one who believe in yourself, why the others have to believe in you?
But that's not just a saying. That's something you really mean, right?
Yeah, I do. I do really mean. And as an artist, I think everybody who does any artistry stuff, we are very fragile. So the line, mm-hmm. the red line of our balance is so fragile that it takes a second to break it over, and then you don't know how to handle yourself. Mm-hmm. So what you need is be confident in what you do, and also try to listen to people. If you ask me to become the best NBA players, okay, now I'm sitting. I'm not tall enough, yeah. I would say. Thanks God I'm not short, but I cannot play basketball. Mm-hmm. So you have to be smart to find what it fits to you, with your mind, with your body. But also, when I go on stage and the people cheers up, the people applaud, then you say, okay, I'm going the right way. Mm-hmm. But if it happens that something doesn't work, this is not the moment to say, okay, I'm going to quit.
That's not important. When it doesn't work, it's not the moment to quit.
It's true, and this sounds very old fashioned, but it's true that you learn more from your failures, from your mistakes, than from your success. Mm-hmm. But still, you need success. Yeah. Otherwise, you get depressed. Mm-hmm. So listen to people. Sometimes after a show, a fan comes to me and says something, and then start ringing a bell because he said, oh, I love it, everything. That moment was a little bit confused for me. Okay, why he said that? Why she said that? And then you start thinking, maybe she's right, because she is my judge in that moment, or he's my judge. They are the person who purchased a ticket, and they invest their time and money to come to see me. Mm-hmm. So I have to pay respect to them.
I think it's very interesting what you're saying, because you are the first person I'm hearing that says you got to listen to the people that pay that ticket and spend their time to come to your show, because so many people are saying that there are so many assholes out there who just want to... And I bet you've experienced that too, that there are just people out there who are not so nice and want to bring you down.
Well, if you meet the best actors, the best singers, the best performers in the world, you will always find the humble people.
Yeah.
Because if you are very good, you don't need to show to people every single moment that you are the star, that you are the best. If you are
And I love
in the
like,
middle,
seeing you rehearsing and you're like on stage, you are this like... You are an escape artist. You're facing death. It's hard work what you're doing, and you would think you're a tough guy, but then you're with your family and your daughter. You're the sweetest guy in the world.
Yeah, well, of course, because also there is Lord Neil on stage and me on stage. So I don't have problem with personalities, but it's just that you have to switch, swap from your private life to your public life.
Right.
Also, because I'm a performer, so my career is, I don't know, other 5 years, 6 years,
you
10 years, very, very short time. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a life, a part of the stage, a part of what you do as a performer, then when you finish, you're done. And this is where depressions arrive, when you see that everybody was around you and everybody disappeared in a moment. Mm-hmm. every time I had a bad accident, this happened. Only few people remain close to me, and the others disappear. Because of course, when you are on the top, on the edge of the mountain, everybody are friendly.
So but you know where people are.
Yes, you can feel it. You can feel it, and I know, that you are just, you know, a butterfly in this business. And then if you start thinking it will never be over, then you are just naive.
Yeah. And I know you've been, like, you called it stubborn. I would call it persistent.
Yes. Yes.
You did so many things to get where you are today. And I know that many people would have stopped so much earlier. So congratulations for
that. Thank you.
There's one more question I want to ask you. What role does taking care of your body, of your health, play in that whole game?
Well, a crucial role. I'm terrified to have accidents, to stop working, not only for me, but now especially for the responsibilities for 40 more people that are working in the production. And I know that if I do something stupid, everybody are gonna stop and they cannot work.
That's a big responsibility.
It is in the way that if you start thinking you are invincible, if you start thinking that nothing can stop you, there is the moment when you are more than naive.
That's when it happens, right?
this is the moment. So what I do, and I always did, push more. So if I start walking on the street, aware that anything could happen, this is the moment when you got hurt. I just go on my way. I don't care. I take all the risks, and I treat my body as well as I can. So
you work out a lot.
Yeah, but also, you know, yesterday we had a great party after the premiere. 11 o'clock, it was enough. Midnight, go to bed. And the day after, you're ready. So little sacrifices that I did for my whole life as a professional sportsman. Also, my life was waking up in the morning, go training, then go to study, then take a nap, then go again to train, and then
disciplined about your physical.
Yeah, you must be. Don't listen to the fairy tales that you can be the rock stars. You go for the night, you got drunk, you take any kind of drugs, and then the day after you do your best concert or shows ever. This is bullshit. That's not how it works. You want to be good, then you need discipline. If you don't got enough as even a person, you have a very short life. As an artist, as a performer, you cannot deal with the difficulties that you have on stage, because every night you have to be at your maximum power. People respect what you do, but you have to respect them, which means that if I have 200 people in front of me or 2,000 people, it doesn't matter. Even with one person, you have to push.
That's one thing that I learned very early on when I was waitressing, when I did musical theater school. And I worked in a restaurant where it was live music every day. And my boss, would be singing every night, and I loved watching her whenever she went on stage, like in her cooking outfit, and people stopped eating just looking at her. And she was like, every night, it didn't matter if the room was full or if there's, like you said, if there's one person, she says, you gotta give your all every night.
Yes, it's your duty, your job, I would say. It doesn't stop on stage. When you finish and people come to you, that's important. That's part of what you are. And there are no stupid questions. There are no stupid
attitudes. Even in podcasts, not stupid questions.
Never. And this is why I love I always ask, don't tell me what you're going to ask me in advance. If it's something that I don't like, I just say, please, let's move on. But I never met anyone enough stupid to ask me something that make me uncomfortable. And I know that people are curious, and I don't know what they are curious about, but I know they are curious. So why should I say yes or no to different questions? I choose the people that are going to interview me in the right way. So
Yay, thank you.
I don't have the problem to say, no, this is inappropriate.
Well, then, thank you so, so, so much.
Thank you, Michaela.
And I wish you all the best for your family and your career and everything you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.